Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Several recent studies have shown that there are high rates of sexual harassment that take place while scientists and students conduct research in the field. One of our local researchers is going to be looking at this issue and some solutions. She is Dr. Carol Colanino, Research Assistant Professor at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville Center for STEM Research, Education, and Outreach. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And you've received a grant to do this research. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But I guess my first question for you would be, what have previous studies reported about sexual harassment when students or scientists are working in the field?
Yeah, so there's been, in recent years, a couple of studies have come out that have shown a rate of about 50 to 70% of students and trainees, early people in their careers, experience sexual harassment, and is up to 70 to 80% at least witness sexual harassment occurring while they're studying at a field site. So it's pretty staggering numbers that we're seeing that's occurring.
Those are incredible numbers. And one of the reasons why this interested me when I saw this from the university was that I have a friend who works in the field she's in geology. And, you know, she's mentioned multiple times, she's probably in her late 20s, but she's mentioned multiple times the issues she's had working in the field. You know, I'm curious if anecdotally from that research you've seen maybe who typically is the perpetrator of the harassment or what forms harassment takes in the field.
So the studies that we have had conducted haven't really identified the perpetrators per se. We do know the victims of or the survivors of the sexual harassment and assault tend to be early career, young career, people who don't have as much power as those above them. Anecdotally, I've heard stories about field directors harassing students and trainees. There's also student-to-student harassment, so it's not necessarily one type of person that's always doing the harassment, but we are seeing that the people who are being harassed tend to be younger, early in their career, more vulnerable, with less power. So we do know that when harassment occurs from student to student, a lot of the times the field directors may overlook it. So if a student is harassing another student, people who are in power in that situation might not necessarily chime up and say that's not appropriate behavior. So it's a kind of a power structure issue. You know, who has power in this structure in the field and who is commenting on to whom about what is and isn't good behavior.
You know, beyond that power structure, are there other circumstances that might contribute? For example, maybe there being only a few people on a site or lack of supervision or things that just kind of come with the territory?
Yeah, so the research is still kind of showing, like, what causes sexual harassment to occur or what factors lead to an environment where sexual harassment is more likely. That power structure is probably one of the biggest issues at play, especially when you have a leadership group. So if you have people in power who have ignored the issue, that really comes into play. Research has shown in very male-dominated work environments, for example, your friend who's a geologist, that's considered to be a more male-dominated field, sexual harassment is more likely to occur. So if you have a female in a more male position, or a position that's normally held by somebody who is male, those people are more vulnerable to being harassed. And then also the concept that when people have to do sexual harassment training, if it's perceived as a compliance issue, if like, oh, we just have to do that because, you know, the bosses say we have to do it, rather than it actually being taken seriously, that climate kind of perpetuates itself through the organization, and people don't think that sexual harassment is something they need to worry about or take seriously. So,
when it comes to the career choices then for maybe what these younger entrants into the fields, you know, might do, or diversity in the field, what's the result of this behavior?
Well, there's multiple outcomes that can happen. What we think tends to happen is that, you know, with these students who are being, who experience sexual harassment, we think they, in the most part, are likely to leave the field. A lot of these field experiences, field research experiences that undergraduate students have to take are kind of gatekeeper courses. So if you don't do well in that context, in that type of research environment, it's very likely that you're not going to get a position in the field. And so if students have a really bad time, have a are in an environment where they don't feel comfortable, it's very likely that they won't pursue a career in that science and go take another career path. So that's one of the, I guess, more minor things that can happen. For a lot of people, it can be very traumatic. You know, they've had this dream their whole life to be that scientist. You know, that's what they've always wanted to be. So it can also come with, you know, symptoms of depression and traumas, all, you know, all those things that can really hurt somebody's career. And for a lot of people, they decide to take a step back and not pursue that dream as much, but still might be, you know, trying a little bit. So it can kind of set their career back. So there's lots of different, you know, can go from, you know, mental health issues to just not having reached your full potential in your career, which can be, you know, which is really traumatic for a lot of people. So.
Now, the university has received a grant from the National Science Foundation to look at this, and it looks like your work as the principal investigator will focus a lot on being proactive and coming up with solutions for this.
Yeah. So when in the last, like, 5 years, there's been several studies that have really highlighted that this is a problem, that it's happening to students, early career people, trainees. All these people are witnessing or experiencing sexual harassment, and it's brought this issue to light, but we haven't really figured out ways to prevent it. And these field research settings are kind of unique. You know, it's something that a scientist who work in the field, you have to be able to do field work to do your science. So we know that it's happening in places where people have to do their sciences, but we haven't looked at how we can prevent that. You know, it's not a typical work environment, so there are recommendations in other more typical workplaces, but out when students are in the field, we don't really know what can be done to help protect them. So we're going to try out a couple of different suggested recommendations and see if those play out in the field and how that might impact how the research is done and how the students perceive their safety while they're in the field and how that might play into them feeling as if they belong as that scientist, you know.
Now, beyond the field schools, will your research touch on any ways to improve the atmosphere for researchers that would then enter the career field?
Yeah, a lot of the context that we're going to be studying in at field sites, if students go on to get a career in that field, I think some of these recommendations can be applied to more of those work settings that are very field-based. So I'm an archaeologist by training, and there are archaeologists who go out in the field every day. That's their career. That's their profession. And they also face some pretty staggering numbers in terms of sexual harassment and sexual assault. So a lot of these recommendations, I think, will be able to be applied to the workplace for people who do field-based work out in the field. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I know this is a 2-year project, correct? So it's going to be a while.
Okay. Yeah, 3 years.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to hearing your results, and we thank you for joining us this morning on KMOX.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.